All right, funding the case, we have to create a record.
Well, thank you. First of all, just by way of introduction, Mike is the managing partner of our company responsible for all development. Mike reports to me. Susan Garson reports to Mike. Susan's in Italy. So we're like sort of here standing in for Susan. That's why you're seeing a new face. And Mike's been with us about 7 years. And Mike's the principal with the company. And Mike actually has significant experience working on, his information was in our RFP, and Mike was the lead developer for a company called The Related Companies when they did a large public-private partnership in West Palm Beach called City Place, which is fairly well documented and fairly well known. They could figure out a way to charge for breathing air, that would be a great financial success. They haven't figured that out yet. So we are following sort of a process, and let me sort of, I guess, make an attempt to, and I have, I'm brief on a lot of the details and specifics. I keep in touch with those things, but I'm really not necessarily here to hopefully get into a lot of fine point detail on, what kind of rents or square foot we think we're going to get for this, or what percentage of the cost is going to change because of this. I'm here to really talk in broad. So I think there are a lot of details that I don't want to give the impression that I don't think that small things are important, but I do believe that the way to get to a solution is going to be us working with John and with your staff to have sort of the cumulative effect of a lot of little things that in the aggregate are significant enough to make a difference. So if I gloss over some specific things, it's not because I don't think they're important, it's because I don't think I should see you all day talking about this sort of thing.
Right, and I'm not sure that's the objective, because we have not gone through the specific things in part because it was hard to understand what this whole thing looks like at this point.
But I think, our job is to do all the detail work. I think that John's role as your representative is to help us with that and help vet that. And then from that comes sort of a big concept, and we describe to you the big concept, and then the specific details are all pieces that build up the big concept. But you really have to start, I think, with understanding the big picture. And I think to start, I could be off by a few million dollars, and I don't want to be flipping about millions of dollars. But order of magnitude, we have what amounts to, in total, about a $20 million problem. And how that problem was created, or has been created, and one could argue that I could probably make an argument going back looking at numbers that were a month or two old, that the problem is perhaps as large as 25. There are ways to look at the problem and view it perhaps as small as 15. But I think if you kind of start in the 20 to 25 million dollar range, I think that's an important place to start. There are, I think, a number of reasons why we have that issue. In general, construction costs have risen, I believe, a minimum of 30% since the RFP was put together. Somebody may know the exact date. Are we a year past since the RFP?
May 2nd, 2005.
So a little over a year. It's
I think there's probably sort of construction index data that would support that, but I believe that that's the order of magnitude. So when you're looking at total hard cost, and John, maybe you can help me, the order of magnitude on the hard cost is $50-60 million on the original RFP, I believe. So it was sort of in that kind of range.
Yes, it was. So 6 months.
So you start with, you kind of, that takes care, that explains sort of a $15-20 million kind of component. Now that's really not the full story. We knew going in that the constraints of the site, and I'm really focusing, I'll come back to the wall stack in a moment, but I'm really focusing on Lot 5 at the time being. The constraints of the site, the dimensions, the desire, and I believe the right choice, the desire to keep the parking either buried or obscured from public view, and I don't want to underline or obscured from public view, I think we knew going in was complex. We knew going in would make the project ultimately more expensive. Now, we factored in some of those costs when we prepared our initial estimate, and those costs have been rising for the first time that we've discussed what that cost has been rising. So when you start with a site that is, you know, fairly dense and constrained, and you start with a design vision that says here are the things that have to happen, and by definition with the intensity on the site, you really can't have above grade parking, have the open space, have the amount of development on the site within the four corners of the site, and make the parking invisible from the public view. It's too many things you're trying to do. So we knew that the parking would have to go underground. I would say the complexity of the design kind of forced us into a solution that over time you have less opportunities for value engineering when you're forced into a single solution. And typically value engineering, you can twist and turn and so forth, but then there's really only a small envelope of the parking needed to go, and in some respects may still need to go. So we have sort of the general market stuff. I don't know to this day how much money the peer review process added to the cost of the project. But it's certainly millions, if not hundreds of thousands. I doubt that it's $5 million. I would be surprised if it was $5 million. And it's very hard to...
Is that the changes that came out of the peer review design?
Yeah, and I want to be clear, not just because we're on tape, but I want to be clear that I don't want to paint the picture that the dean said, here, make this building more expensive. And, you know, we just said, okay, we'll make it more expensive. I mean, the dean had, in the process, as you know, took some time and had a number of iterations. I mean, the design fees alone on our side of the process, this is with the dean doing his work for you, either gratis or for some nominal consideration, our design fees alone on the revisions were well in excess of $100,000. To put it into perspective, which is not, I mean, I guess in the context of a $80 or $90 million project doesn't sound like a lot of money, but in the context of a pre-development design budget, it's an incredible amount of money. So it's difficult to pull apart and say, okay, well, the peer review process cost us X millions because the plans were evolving. Some of the changes we made, we probably would have made anyway under the normal course of having the design evolve. We probably would have made them without the influence of the dean. Some of the changes we made were with the influence of the dean. He didn't take the plans and draw himself. He made suggestions. We took the suggestions that we thought were important. We took some feedback from you all, and we came to a solution. How much that cost, I don't know. But I can assure you it's measured in millions, not hundreds of thousands. And like I said, I'd be surprised if it was as much as $5 million. So, we have, we've had a lot of good recent experience on, unfortunately, on dealing with projects that have rising costs. We're in the epicenter of that in South Florida. Where the factors are even more pronounced than they are here. And so what we've been able to do up until maybe 6 months ago in projects where we're in a market where the market is so hot and we're not constrained by significant percentage of the project being set aside for affordable, we've pretty much cost go up, that's okay, prices have gone up, and we kind of make it up. And in certain cases, we fared better because as fast as costs are going up, so on prices are going up. I'm going to say that stop, and there's certain stop in Florida. I think it's less pronounced here, the sort of the, I don't think the run up was as big here, so the swelling is not as big. But nonetheless, I don't think we can count on dramatic price appreciation to bail us out of a cost problem. I think we are banking on, as we always have, we are banking on, you know, high quality execution and a style that we think the customer will appreciate and will pay for. But keep in mind we have like 15% or so of our revenue source staying constant and constant at a deficit, and that as the cost of that deficit grows. So, I mean, that sort of explains in broad pictures where the costs have run away from us. In terms of solutions, we think that there are probably four sort of broad categories of areas for solutions. And again, I'm staying away from the wall stack because I think there's only one solution. If we're going to do anything on the wall stack, it's the solution we've come up with. There's, I don't believe there would be a different solution. And one concept maybe to take the
hold on. Yeah. The solution you came up with, this is Dean?
Yeah, I don't, and I think that solution is fine-tuned perhaps from the original solution. I don't think it's as dramatically different as the original solution on Lot 5. And I just don't, I believe that as constrained as Lot 5 is, the law is that the variables for solution, if the objective is to put things on top of it and to make it look different from the street, you know, you can push them one way and turn another way, but there's no real, you can't really expand the boundaries of that project. There's no, you know, I don't see it from that across. So I'm focusing again mostly on Lot 5.
Okay, we were told that Wallace was, from your perspective, off the table. And
I spoke to Susan said, and that
you didn't have an interest in doing Wallace based on the numbers.
Well, I want to let me clarify the point. We lose money doing the Wallace stuff. Okay? We, from the last set of numbers I looked at, I believe if you go back to the original financial setup, I believe we're better off just saying, here's the money we were going to pay you for the rent on the wall spec, here it is, and please don't make us build this thing on that deck, because we'll lose more money, more than just the rent. We'd actually be better off paying the rent and then letting you give the rights to somebody else.
Okay.
On the actual deck piece. Now, I want to be clear though that when you circle back to the affordable housing discussion, which is a piece, I believe, a potential piece of the solution, the cost to deliver the units, I believe, and I need to double check and look at this, the cost to deliver the units in the wall stack is less expensive than the cost to deliver units in the nine-story, three-story, nine-story tower. So I don't want to just, I mean, if it's better that you generate revenue from the Wallace Tech from some other source, that's great, but I don't want you to get the impression that I'm saying that, okay, forget it. We're writing that off. We know we said we'd be able to come up with a solution to both. We can't. I don't want to, that would be an inaccurate.
Because if we're going to continue to ask you to sit with John in the hotel room for a week and work this out.
I'm confident.
Good point. I'd very much like to keep the Wallace staff in the mix.
Mm-hmm.
And we've looked at it. We've looked at this as related projects.
We understand. I think the thing that it was funny because on the drive over here, I looked at my watch and I'm like, okay, it's 8:00 in Italy. Like, she's got to answer her cell phone. Because we talked a lot about this meeting, and the one thing we didn't talk about was the Wallace Tech, and I was trying to get like some critical evidence. The point about the saying that the Wallace Tech is quote off the table or quote not a part of the strategy going forward, is just to say that it's, as currently contemplated, it's a money loser, and it's a money loser above and beyond the pain of the ground rent. Doesn't mean we don't come up with a design solution that makes it accomplish part of what we're trying to accomplish, which is the making it feel different from the street and engaging the street and having that activity on the street. Doesn't mean we can't still do that, but every dollar we pour into a project that's saying we want to deliver X number of residential units and so forth on the wall effect, we go further in the hole as currently contemplated. But yeah, we're having, to the extent we have a job to do with John, that certainly is part of the job. But I want to be clear that when we look at the problem, the order of magnitude of the problem, you know, I want to pick the big things, because if you can't get through the big things, back to the small thing, if you can't like nail the big things, there's not enough small things in the aggregate to get you to where you need to be.
Right.
Okay? So what I was starting to say, and I sort of veered off course there, is that there are kind of four major categories that we sort of think of as potential solutions. Category number one is figuring out a way to use the incremental revenue generated to government from the project to help fund improvements. So I want to be clear that, I mean, one alternative is obviously the Amendment 1 financing. There are presumably other forms under your financial advisor and bond counsel, so I think you suggested that there are other forms of public finance. But I want to be clear that what we're not sitting here saying, okay, town, you, before we said you write us a check for $500,000 and that's all you need to do, we're not in here saying, okay, now write us a check for $18 million and that's all you need to do. What we're in here saying is that part of the solution needs to be a way to capture the incremental future revenue that's generated from the project. The tax revenue, the enhanced tax base, enhanced sales tax revenue, whatever the case may be. One of the parts of the solution to make this work is to figure out a way to take those revenues and have them enhance the financial performance of the project. I will tell you, we've participated in projects where you take that and you collect in conjunction with government issue bonds. We've also done it where we've actually taken the increment and in effect privately financed the increment. In other words, most people, when they do these projects, they estimate the future income stream, they go to bond council and financial advisors, they change their borrowing rate, they figure out what they can amortize, you take that and go sell the security to somebody else starts a check, the check comes in, the developer uses the check to fund the improvements. That's our first choice. But that's not to say that's the only way we have done it, because we have done it before, where we take those future income streams and we assume those are revenues of the project as they come in. And so what I want to say about this, the concept of public finance is that, and I probably won't say this about any of the other four categories, I don't believe it is the solution, but I don't believe there's a solution that doesn't include it. And I really, if there's anything I, if there's two thoughts I want to make sure I deliver today, one is that I'm here because we're, you know, still pouring our hearts and our wallets into this project and we're still very much committed to it. That would be the first thing. And the second one would be, as objectionable as I know historically that concept has been, and I realize that politically, just even, not just locally, but also statewide, it's a recent phenomenon and at times, and I know it's a contested phenomenon. I really believe, and you look at this 16 ways to Sunday, that there is no solution that doesn't involve that. Because I believe that's the only one single thing that will get you sort of a, you know, a solid eight-figure, you know, 10, 15 million, like, boom, big chunk of solution. So that's the one we probably, I don't know if you said the most time on, but that's the one we have honed in on as being a big part of the solution. The second one is the whole concept of the design of the project. And when I say the design, I'm not talking about gutting or changing the design feel. I'm talking about actually making structural significant changes to the four corners of the property. And that really involves trying to get the parking out from underground. And that really involves expanding the boundary of the property, and that involves the McFarlands and the Notion Hall. It involves the gas station and the funeral home, which I assume you've seen the sketches and the concepts. We have had.
I'll tell you, we've seen
one
very crude. So let me just ask you, because you weren't absolutely clear, and because are you? Is the design solution to redraw the whole thing?
No.
In some way?
No, the simple way to put it is basically if you buy the two adjacent properties, right?
And you said you.
We.
There's
one, the adjacent. We buy the adjacent properties. And believe you me, we're trying. You know, we're in very, very active dialogue. They were begging the press to stay out of the court, and the press wants to talk about it, I think the price goes up. But the simple way to look at it is basically take the parking that's buried under lot 5, take it out, put it on top of these two parcels, and in front of it, on the Franklin Street side, build, you know, a four-story building kind of that would, from an architectural feel, replicate the feel we've already created, attempted to create in the schematics on the front of Lot 5. And basically have commercial, in all likelihood, commercial on the ground floor and residential above it. So you would, you know, you would accomplish a few things. One is, you know, I have to look at the savings, but I want to say, you know, maybe it's as much as $5 million on the parking savings. Is that?
Actually, I think the parking is almost $8 million.
Right.
And the buffer savings now that we're finding on the site work, right, also associated with it. So that actually has turned into a very big number.
Right. So the notion of taking the parking out, putting it above ground.
You said site work and site work?
Yeah.
You don't have to go down.
2.8 million.
Yeah, it's sort of interweaving. Michael and I went over, you know, got scans on the phone last week and went over it. I think we picked up like an additional 2.4.
On the sidewalk?
On the sidewalk. Right.
So 2.4 plus the 4 for the parking. I mean, the actual underground segment of the parking.
Yeah, I mean, the last numbers on the parking
was actually more than you got five.
You got five.
Okay, so no, but so that four, I mean, your land costs are projected at $4 million.
All right, and that's a projection that's based upon conversations that are, you know, not that old, but they're evolving. One can assume that, that those prices will go up as time goes on.
Okay, but the idea is that building the parking above ground costs essentially without the land costs. Did you say that? $8 million.
About 20,000 space, 18,000 space or so less.
Times almost 400 space.
Almost 20,000.
So that's almost 7.2 million. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. It was almost 8 million plus the site cost.
And that, I'm sorry, but does that factor in the $4 million land versus
the year? No. So if you take the $8 million savings in the parking and put the parking above grade, so below grade, plus the $2.4 million in site work savings, that's 10.4. But then offsetting that is you have to purchase the funeral home and the Exxon gas station for about 4.5, I guess is what we're estimating. So the net effect is around
Plus, you also get to pick up a benefit of
the additional retail.
The additional value for what you can build on the site. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure you'll get into this, but wouldn't you be able to build, wouldn't you save time building the whole project by having a bigger piece of property?
Well, that was one of the questions asked, and we are working on that. We are working on that. So you think there is some savings in time, you don't know if it's 6 months, it might be 3 months, maybe 4 months, but that is the number that you're working on.
I mean, and that's an example, I mean, in my opinion, I think that's, I want to say it's an insignificant number, but you know, there's a number of assumptions. For example, we continue to carry 6.5% interest. The interest assumption, which is probably not accurate today. It was a year ago.
This piece here. Do you know enough about the negotiations to know what if that's?
We, to my knowledge, we're not contemplating that piece as being an alternative. But I don't have a recent land acquisition update. The only thing I know is we are the discussions with the. The discussion with the gas station folks are basically, when they're either loan sellers, they have a lifestyle, they want to maintain their lifestyle. We can help demonstrate for them that they can maintain their lifestyle and have less risk, don't have to work as hard. That's the solution for them. The funeral home is a bit more complicated. The funeral home is basically, once you have a funeral home, find
some dollars more somehow. Yeah. Okay,
and so it's complicated.
And your pro forma here doesn't include doing anything with this extra piece here at this point.
Correct. Why is it? We've all designed for it. I mean, we don't.
You ain't got there yet.
Yeah, no.
And you got income from those two houses already, so it's not a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, it's not.
That was a struggle.
Yeah, I know. At the end of the day, you all heard me say this. I mean, I'm facetious about, I'm suspicious about contractor estimates on credits. How much is the capital cost? You ask the contractor how much is dollar depending. The change order is $3 and the credit, well, it was really only worth $1, and in your original bid it was $2. So I mean you talk about having three drawings. I mean, we've asked Scanska to tell us the ideas of the savings. And keep in mind, no disrespect to Scanska, they're as good as anyone at doing estimates. But, you know, the initial estimates are, what is something going to cost, what's going to cost, and then you give them more details, the cost goes up, as you all know. And so we said, okay, what if we change it like this? Oh, that'll save you a lot of money. But there's no plan showing that. So my guess is, based upon past experience, that as you develop the plans further, the delta of the savings start to contract.
I've seen the movie before. It's always the same ending.
But that's why you have to start with numbers that are like $8 million. Because if you're starting with numbers that are $80,000 or $200,000, you actually design fee your way out of the savings. It's just, you get to know, you know. So, I mean, like, for example, the things like what happens with these houses and so forth, I don't know. I mean, to determine that, you know, the garage needs more turnaround area, the loading area, I have no idea. But I mean, we're not, it'd be one thing if we were looking at a situation where you're showing a new pro forma and we said, well, here's the public finance component, here's what we want to do. It appears though there's a potential windfall. I hope we have that problem. I hope we are in a windfall problem where the discussion is, well, you guys have a windfall here, you weren't factoring in the value of this piece of property.
I was just trying to figure out, I mean, this is, it's an opportunity. I mean,
absolutely.
You have a bigger space, you can do more with it, you can do something different. It's a disappointment, you know, the parking being underground, I mean, obviously it's very expensive, but you can then use the space above ground for something else. I mean, and whether, yeah.
Well, I think the one thing, the part about the second sort of grouping of ideas to solve it, the part about this positive, and I think frankly overrides the negative of the garage being above ground. I mean, if you had wall stack to do over again, if you could have built it in the middle of the block instead of on the side of the block, you wouldn't be talking about what do we do with it, right? You'd be, and this is what this is talking about doing. So to the extent a development pattern starts to establish back here, you've established a geometry that works, it can be repeated. The other positive is, you know, you're now, the experience along Franklin from the Caribou Coffee, is that what it is?
Mm-hmm.
You know, from Caribou to the Kinko's, but then you don't have that big gap in the tooth that, you know, we're trying to block by a stall, but you still have that casino home, which doesn't belong on the main street and the gas station.
That's important.
That's a huge, I mean, I think that overrides the fact that the garage, you know, is above ground, as long as you don't see it. Now, if you see it, and it's just sort of in your face, then I'm not sure that that's not. I mean, we've spent time criticizing the wall of stack. The last thing we want to do is, like, build, you know, the wall of stack part of it. I mean, so. So the second thing is this redesign. And I don't mean design features, I mean blank. Four corners. The third thing is, you know, this sort of, and we continue to carry it as a potential area for savings, and we continue to talk about it, is the whole notion of value engineering. In general, I'm sure there's money still in that. And I want to just go on record on the whole concept of value engineering. You're saying, if you have a project that doesn't financially make sense, you can't go into it saying, well, I'll value engineer my way into having it make sense. That's not a good business practice. I think value engineering is important. I think it's an iterative process. It happens all along the way. I think people overestimate, you know, the significance of it early on. And I think it's important to recognize that it's not going to be a net. Every value engineering idea isn't going to work to start. And second of all, you need to actually keep in your arsenal the value engineering ideas, because they're going to help offset the things that you did not expect as the design continues to evolve. The things that typically it's one of those, you make one value, you know, it's the classic law of unintended consequences, you value engineer one thing,
extend out, you have to actually do something different. But I think there'll be, you know, there'll be some money there. The fourth sort of grouping of ideas is the affordable housing piece. I have not been in person on meetings with Robert Dowell and Susan. But we, you know, we have no issue, and we certainly intend to comply and hopefully do more than just comply with the requirements and deliver the percentage requirements. And I'm a believer in the notion of affordable housing being inclusionary. Having said that, I know there's a principle that there's a desire, and I think it's a noble one, that every building that gets built should have a certain number of the units within that building be affordable, and that if you're going to build five buildings, each of the five buildings should have units within those five buildings that are affordable. You know, I'd like to challenge that idea. You know, I question whether it makes sense to deliver affordable housing on arguably perhaps one of the most expensive pieces of real estate in the town. You know, I don't know how much we're losing per unit delivering them, but it's conceivable that you could actually deliver twice as many units. If we could lose the same amount of money, you could deliver twice as many units through some other solution, like building them on less expensive land, building them in less expensive styles of buildings, and that doesn't require existing old apartments and renovating them, and it doesn't mean they have to be, you know, a 30-minute car ride away. They can still be within walking distance as well to access the transit. And I, my personal opinion, and this is, you know, this is now talking philosophical rather than business, my personal opinion that I think what's important is that the affordable housing is in the right location relative to public transit, relative to access to jobs and where people can be near their families. I get the reason why you don't want to build it out in the middle of nowhere and have people spend all the money that they're saving driving themselves somewhere and lose all the time they take up having to spend an hour or two on public transit. I don't understand why they have to be in every building. I don't know how much experience, you know, my hometown, we're going through the same process. They're probably a couple of years behind you all, but in talking this through, you know, what do you do if we have affordable units in this nine-story building and, you know, you have a unit that was affordable at whatever the price was, and then next to it you have a unit that somebody paid in a resale program, theoretically, they pay three or four times that, and you now have a level of service that's expected by the condominium association. They want a doorman, they want concierge services, they want a certain level of service that costs, you know, instead of initially hoping it was maybe a couple hundred bucks a month in condo dues, the majority of the residents in this condominium building want a level of service that costs $800 a month. And they vote that. It's their units, it's their exercise, their right. And what do you do for the eight units that's in the building that are affordable? Do they, their condo dues are by law or by deed held down? And so now these people are in the building getting the benefit of these expensive services and feeling uncomfortable because they're really not paying for them and they really don't want them, and the other people that are in the building want the expensive services. I mean, there's, you know, there's a fine line between, oh, we don't want to just build a bunch of, we want to build the projects, to we want to be inclusionary. And I think that there's perhaps some solutions, whether it be on other projects we're considering nearby, where the cost to deliver the housing is less than what the cost to deliver the housing is in these buildings, or some other creative solutions. I think there may be a way to deliver the same number of units we've been talking about delivering, but delivering them in a way that doesn't cost us as much money. And I, you know,
I don't know if that's a $1 million potential, or I think my bet is it's $1 million, maybe it's two, top five, top ten. I don't know if maybe there's $1 million there. And those are the four big things, and there are a lot of ideas, John's ideas, other ideas, Susan's been cataloging, that, you know, I hope will produce some positive results, and we'll work hard to make sure they do. But, you know, public finance, taking the four corners of property, value engineering, which I really don't even want to put in the group because I just, I just think it's chasing your tail, but that's just going to be a process that everybody follows. And then the notion of being a little bit more creative on the affordable housing component. And the affordable housing is really, I mean, I realize that it's a bit of a difficult situation, because, I mean, I think no matter what we come up with, even if we said we want to give you twice as many units, I still think it will, no matter what, it'll read that, you know, the developer just wants to get the affordable housing just out of the downtown, out of the expensive projects. But that's the kind of thing, I mean, not, you know, at the end of the day, if it's the right thing to do, we ought to consider doing it, rather than not foreclose that as an option just because we're worried that the press is going to take a shot at whatever. It's okay.
That's not the word. That's not the word. No. KCM and I did on the, you probably know this from talking with Robert, we have an ongoing discussion about working toward an official inclusionary zoning policy ordinance for a time. And one thing that committee we have a lot of unanswered questions, we certainly have talked about and don't have a solution yet for the condo fee thing, but there are a few principles that we have agreed on at, you know, the committee as a whole, including developers around the table, who sometimes have made the point that you made about how, well, maybe it would be better to, you know, to do the housing on call and stuff. But the ultimate one are the recommendations of the committee is going to be that the first and best option always is to, what's called inclusion in the system within the new development. Because I have to say, Casey, that you hear it from the direction of, well, you really don't want to, you didn't really go completely there, but we've heard some developers say, oh, you don't want to put a person of low income within this development, for their sake, because they'll feel bad about being there. Well, I don't think it's our job to say who's going to feel bad about living next door to someone who makes a whole lot more money than them. I think our job is to make a policy decision, and as I said, it's to cancel, I think, and probably committee is strongly in favor of a policy that puts those units where they should be, which is within the development.
I think what I've been told is we have to have units in every one of the buildings.
That's the ideal.
And we could debate that for a long time, but the definition of, and I'm not going there with it, a low-income person with a lot of good next to a person making a lot of money. I think it's great cities all over the world to have people living in the city, and there's alternatives to different types of housing, but I'm not sure that it means that you accomplish any more by saying that, okay, on floor three of a nine-story building, you need to have one unit, and on floor six, you need to have one unit. Whereas, why aren't all units in one of the buildings? I don't understand how that doesn't accomplish that objective of being inclusionary. I mean, it's a project that has different goals within the project. But I mean, I haven't been in any one of your committee meetings, so I'm if that's not a starter, we can strike it off the list. I'm not sure how it contradicts
a policy. The non-starter is not doing them within these projects.
That's right.
If you want to work out some options,
yeah,
that, I mean, we may not figure out the condo issue in time to give you certainty that, to bring us a proposal. So I think it's reasonable to look at these buildings as a project together.
They have a program.
Correct. It's got to be an element of the program. We can't, I mean, politically and emotionally, the council is deeply invested in this. And that's a non-starter. The other is, you know, we've been out very public on doing this without TIF and without grabbing any funds. And, you know, I understand things have changed, but, you know, it's a big change to have us have to face the public and say, whoops, you know, the numbers worked really well in the other program, but what if we did $5 million or $10 million in some type of public investment? It's hard to even explain what we're getting that we weren't getting before. So it's difficult, and I understand that it may not work, and it might have to be a component of it, but I don't know how we would explain it at this point. That before the project is building the parking and now we're paying for the parking is a really big shift.
When you say we're paying, John asked me to run it like we wouldn't say we're paying for the parking, because we...
The town's investment in this.
Right.
You know, what...
Well, I don't want to split hairs with you here, but the we isn't, unless one of you buy a unit in that building. The way I'm describing it, the we isn't anyone in this room.
Great. Well, if you could explain that, then we would be... It would be very helpful. So that should be a part of the conversation. Or a part of the...
Well, we need to understand what you just meant. You meant that because using a structure like TIF, and the people who are paying are the people who live there.
There are a number of ways to... There are governments that are notorious for defining the TIF boundary as being incredibly large and the public benefit inuring to a very minute piece of the large boundary. I think that is inexplainable and we do need to be clear that one of the objectives of infill dense mixed-use development is that the infrastructure for the development is there, right? So you're adding uses within the confines of existing infrastructure. You're not being asked to, you know, obviously you're going to have to, if you've got 200 and some odd more, you know, times two, so 500 more residents, I don't know, you're going to need another policeman. I don't know how many policemen you need for 500 residents. There's clear that there are some incremental services required, but the notion is that the value, the taxable value created in the four corners of what we're doing.
Casey, I get that. We all get that. But the proposal that was out in public was that value that was created on that within the four corners was going into the general fund for general purpose use. And the change now is that it's going into the general fund to pay for the debt that was built in for this project. So what I'm saying is, A, that creates a debate on the council that there's no longer unanimity on the council, and it also creates an element that the council has to explain to the public that is significantly different. Mm-hmm. So, I'm personally, if it's a no-go decision on some type of public investment, I'm probably going to come down on the side of making the public investment because I think these projects do a lot of good for the town, but it's a totally different environment. It's almost like the other deal was,
it's hard, it's going to get a lot of scrutiny from the inside and from the public.
That's what worries me, because it's so new, there's only one that's been done.
But
this will be put under a microscope like you wouldn't believe.
Well, I mean, I can just tell you guys right now, I can save you guys a lot of time and I can save me more money. The project isn't going to happen without some component of that. I, as much as I wanted to, as much as I'd love to think that I don't know what the last tally is on the amount of money we spent, as much as I'd love to think it's not wasted, I'm telling you that there is going to have to be some of that.
Right. Now, we have to quickly get to the point that we understand what the project is so we can digest it and make it, have our conversations internally, externally, and together. And
right.
So we really, we were talking about we're willing to meet over the summer, we're willing to do whatever right. we have to do. It'd be great to, roll up our sleeves and just get after it so that we have a project that we can understand and talk to our colleagues about internally and analyze from a financial perspective and make some of these tough decisions
right
ahead of us. So
and the scrutiny and the complexity and the all that, I understand that. And we would not go out alone. We would probably obtain some help on our own side in dealing with some of that scrutiny. I think it's worth the effort. But from a timing standpoint, to be specific about the dollars we need, we really need to know if the property stops here or if the property goes over here.
Mm-hmm.
And those sellers aren't sitting in the church and saying, we gotta get this done by July. That's the last 15th of our expense or whatever. I mean, they are, and we've ordered an appraisal, which we never deal with. How many of the appraisers tell me what the property's worth?
Right.
We've ordered an appraisal so that the appraisal can go to advisors that these sellers have, so that they can have the benefit of the appraisal. Because I know once we actually find it close to the end of the month, fund advisor to them is going to say, well, how do we know this is going to work? We're doing as much as we can do, but
right.
Mm-hmm. And so, this whole thing of, there's these fronts that we're pushing on, right? And on one hand, absent the constraints of dealing with government, where you don't have a single decision maker. Absent that constraint, and then absent the constraint of the public opinion being a feature, absent that constraint, you would work simultaneously and secretively on all fronts at the same time, and then they would all kind of merge, right? So we don't have that luxury. And I am terribly concerned about any additional public disclosure or public debate prior to having my own control.
Mm-hmm.
I am because we could theoretically run this situation with no solution, but you're not even going to like the solution of how we get control of the additional land.
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible in North Carolina.
Yeah, it's
so there's no way to do that.
Yeah. The bottom line is we have apparently willing may be a little bit too strong with them, but we have,
They can be induced.
They can be induced to be willing.
Yeah.
And we have uses on the property that are not mm-hmm.
There's just not the high enough. It's not going to have to be real.
So you have a master plan.
Yeah.
So then
you can negotiate an option to purchase if they'll sign, then you would have what you need to be comfortable in finishing the plan, is what you're saying.
I mean, we obviously haven't stopped doing the plan what I'm saying is that if we can more fully develop the information on the public finance piece. We can continue to more fully develop the design. We can continue to work on the ideas both that we have and that John has.
Mm-hmm.
We can either continue a philosophical discussion on affordable housing, or we can stop doing that.
Yeah.
Either way, we can do those things. But the one thing we can't do, the one thing I would not advise that we do without land control, is have hearings. About
no, the council is not proposing that.
I should
summarize a few of the things I've heard the council say. Number one is it's okay to consider the affordable housing as part of the overall program. And that would not necessarily require that there be housing in each building so long as it's part of the overall program. Is that right, council members? Be willing to consider.
Yeah. Can I, on that point, if you were to look at this plan, there would be 151 condominiums in here. 15% of that is 23, I believe. And we could fill 23 here. And again, I know that's not going to be preferable, but the reason why I think it, you know, would be helpful is that it would be a lot less expensive to build in here than to put them in here. And there's a couple reasons. And then we'll get into how far can you push this issue. I guess the analogy I want to bring to this is we were out in San Francisco back in February looking at some mixed-use developments, and there was a condo conversion, and generally San Francisco was a high-rise. And for whatever reason, it was run on a condo there. The city housing authority had the rights for like 10 units. And he ended up putting these 10 units in a lottery, and they had like 4,000 people apply for them. But what happened was, because it was so skewed, the condo association fees, that the person who got the first one was, I think they did it from 80 to 120%, it was like a 90%, which in San Francisco still meant they made like $55 a year. But they could only afford to pay $108,000 for that unit because the condo association fees were so high. And I guess here, you know, then you start getting into, would we be able to almost do two associations where you could sort of keep the fees down, thus it does sell for a higher price, which helps our numbers, versus when they haven't paid a higher association fee. And I think what Casey was getting to, not that we don't want to mix, you know, moderate income people into with higher income people, but it could be that this condo association someday, you know, then afford it, and we have nightmares about condo associations, could vote for, you know, the valet, they could vote for the concierge, and then the fees are just going to go up and up, and eventually the house owners who own the county land trust would have no value in the unit because the association fees could literally hit the fees.
The fees are clearly an issue, not just with this project, but with all condo projects that are of mixed income.
But I guess you'd be talking about putting 23
units out there,
50 yards from 100%
lot. They share the same garage.
They all have a view of Frankenstein.
Right. And what we probably won't not want to do is have them share in maybe if there was valet or concierge or if there was other amenities in the other building.
I get it. I would think that if that was a solution that made the numbers work a lot better than you, it's totally defensible from a public policy point of view.
Yeah, I know it's not ideal, but I think it's a lot better than the alternative. And, you know, I still think the best thing would be just, you know, paying money in lieu of, but I understand how that
would not happen.
There's something talked about the material for the affordable units being not in Corian countertop on the affordable units, but she did talk about going through some trouble to make them look very similar, and, you know, not even the crown moldings and all that.
So I would think we would do what our standard for rental packages in Florida, which is fairly luxury, where, you know, again, you're going to get, you know,
nicer planning packages that may not be all the same, but still, you're going to get, you know, a nice kitchen cabinetry, you know, we generally don't need vinyl in any of our units, in any of our rentals. It would be more of that package, which really the biggest difference between that and condominiums is the grand auditorium, and also the, you know, maybe the bathroom, upgrading some, you know, fixtures in the bathroom. But that's the biggest difference. And the cabinetry, you might get some more expensive cabinetry than the condominiums. But as you know, your on that is like $4 or $5 a square foot. I mean, it's not, you know, there's not a huge difference. The bigger differences on this savings would be in the structure cost. It would be a lot less expensive to put in a niche 4-story building versus putting in a to a compact 8 or 9 square foot.
But I'm not even sure, like if Susan said we still do Crown Holdings or if we're...
Basically, from where most of us see it, it's going to be a door. I'm confident that there's no way that the inside of these units isn't going to be totally acceptable.
It would be acceptable. I mean, yeah. If you didn't walk the line, you don't want to make them too nice for value, waste the money on this or whatever, but they would be nice.
Well, I just want to think it's as long as it is an acceptable unit and an acceptable fence package, beyond that, I don't think it's right for us to insist on anything more than that. I mean, I don't think crown molding is something that people have to have in their house.
Guys, yeah, we're at the point where we just kind of see what this does for the numbers.
Yeah, you're right.
But I think you can answer my question that if you bring it only 3 there, that could be an acceptable solution.
Well, I think that what the 3 of us are saying is you ought to kick that tire hard.
How you were...
Another point is that the council or the committee is interested in the concept of acquiring the additional properties through your efforts and expanding the project so the space, the corners of the project, as you say, so that the parking can be built above ground. And it wants to understand what the impact on the overall deal is by doing that. Another key point is that the committee needs an overall proposal similar to the one that you provided to us earlier on Lot 5 and Wallace Day that we can actually evaluate it. As you clearly understand, we don't have that kind of proposal right now, and so we have nothing that we can evaluate.
And
we need to be able to do that.
And that includes a building program, a total development budget, pro forma, and then what the city requirements are for investment.
Same kind of thing we had before. Another is that we understand that until you have those property deals arranged, it's very hard for you to deal with certainty, but it seems that you've got enough information now so that you could just assume that it's going to be there and assume a certain price level. That would not prevent you from giving us a restatement of this project so that we can go ahead and start the evaluation with the understanding that something could change if the price moves up beyond the points that you're talking about.
It wouldn't prevent us from doing it, but for advice from your council about if we submit, for example, a full development budget that has...
Stays with the committee.
Okay.
Stays with the committee. And it would be...
It would be unfortunate if it was reported with the price estimates for it.
Yeah. No, it would stay with the committee. And it would basically be the 3 committee members and John and Chris and Ralph and I that would have that information. It would be good to find out whether or not these properties that face on Rosemary Street can be part of the deal and how that would impact the overall appearance as well as the function of the project.
And you're going to talk about the city on the lot, town on the lot next door to it? Or is that an issue?
I don't think it's actually next door.
Exactly. I don't know what you're talking about.
It's one removed. There's many things.
And have I looked at it that we had that was contiguous?
Here.
Where's the little parking lot right next to it? The college?
Sure, right here. There's a parking lot here.
This is over there.
It's over there.
Yeah.
It's over. Okay, it's there.
It's off the edge.
It would be there.
What
building is this?
That's
Alan Fine's building.
Yeah. Or the amendment. We don't own that one, and they're not proposing to buy that one, so.
Okay, I want somebody to check that, because according to our maps, it's contiguous.
Okay.
Okay, that's easy enough. Okay.
We cannot assist you in the acquisition of those properties through eminent domain, number one, because it would be contrary to the council's policy. Number two, it's illegal in North Carolina. Either one of those just makes that impossible. So it's
not a problem.
We'd really like to.
But we can assist you by helping you evaluate the parcels that you're considering for relocating the funeral home. And we've been providing feedback on that issue too, and we'll continue to do that.
I think we've identified, I think we know where it needs to be relocated. We have submitted offers on those properties. There's two pieces that are required collectively to make a parcel that is large enough to be suitable in an area that we've been advised would be appropriate, and we actually think we'll probably have an easier time acquiring that land than we will acquiring, and I think those are, one piece happens to be a surplus piece of land owned by a national chain of restaurants, and the other one is a piece of land owned by somebody that wants to sell their piece of land.
Right.
So I don't think that's going to be problematic.
Okay. As to the...
We're kind of buying a piece of land, building a funeral home, swapping that new funeral home, new piece of land for the old funeral home.
As to potential public participation, town participation in the project, we need to understand several things. What's going to happen to the piece of land, or pieces of land, rather, that you're acquiring? How do they fit in the deal? Who ends up owning those? What value gets assigned to them in the deal? Where do we stand with rents on our project? And in particular, that leads me to, where does Wallace Tech fit into all of this? You talked about Wallace Tech a good bit, and we understand from your conversation some of the reluctance you have to do anything with Wallace Tech right now, but it sounded like you left the door open. So we need to understand what you think you can reasonably do with Wallace Tech, whether it's part of the first phase or whether it has to wait for a later phase. How does it fit in?
I'm not sure you're being accurate on that.
Okay.
In my reading of the council is that we see Lot 5 and Wallace Tech going forward together, and we want some certainty about that. So.
Well, you go through quite a lot of the work here, I think that was.
So. It would be I would want to go to the council to separate them.
Well, there were
the smart shorts and committee are.
Yeah. I want to. Yeah,
it's right. Got to stay in play.
And I understand that. My recollection is that the agreement we reached allowed them to phase it. So I'm not saying that they're disconnected, I'm just saying, what are they proposing, if there is going to be a second phase, when does it occur?
And the agreement also allows phase four, you know, phase two to be an element in the phase as well.
Right, right. But I want to make sure that I'm clear on this point. And Glenn, your outside counsel made this very clear. While there is the opportunity to phase it, and while some of the desire to have both sites handled together in the RFP relates to that we're not satisfied with the way it looks, the way it functions, a bigger part of it, as our negotiation evolved, was the financial part of it.
That's right.
Was that your contribution to the project required that you receive the prepaid ground rents from all the projects. So I want to make sure that gets on the table, but that's a big factor. And then the other thing is I will tell you that one of the Cal said is that we would want an overall proposal to evaluate, and that proposal would include the things that John enumerated. I don't think I can give you a proposal that doesn't address the Wallace Tech. The proposal on the Wallace Tech may say, you know, here's the schematic plan for reskinning the front of the Wallace Tech and putting something on top, and that's in the second phase, and all I can tell you with respect to it is that the rent I'm supposed to pay you for that, I'm still going to pay you, and here's what it is. That may be what the proposal is, but I would not intend to proffer a proposal that would pretend that the law of fact doesn't exist. It's just inconsistent with what you're saying. And by the way, frankly, one of the things, like, if you were to look at the components of the project, the one single thing that works the best
The building.
We're going to need to have schematics so we understand the layout on the space and the connection to other spaces and the general arrangement of the use and access and circulation, all that kind of stuff.
But we don't need that to do this financial analysis.
I think you need it so you understand the proposal that's being made to you. I don't think you can do it without
understanding that.
But you'll be able to understand, okay, this is what, you know, this is right. The scale, this is the mass.
You need something that shows its relationship to the building next door and elevation and that sort of thing. Right. Yeah. As to the public participation and the cost, when Susan first talked with us about this, one of the things we talked about was whether or not there might be some way that we can continue our approach of minimizing the dollars we put in and minimizing the risk we have by having you take some of the risk on that part of it. And I don't know how this would work, but I tried it out with her just as an idea. And I think you were talking about something similar earlier today. And that is, if we decide to participate, if the council decides to participate at whatever level, that the arrangement be one under which you take the risk that the project's going to generate enough funding to pay for the development of the parking. So that the deal is you build it and we agree to buy it from you over a period of time. And based on the amount of money that comes in from the taxes. And if the tax projections work, then there's no problem. And if they don't, then you have the problem instead of the town. And so think about both ways of playing that to see if something is reasonable in there. And that might help the council some as well, that challenge for them.
I think that's some of the questions I had on the First Amendment financing. First off, I don't know the relationship of the town of Chapel Hill has with Orange County, but obviously if you look at Wade Edwards.
Let me cut you off right there so we don't waste any more time. If you want to bring the county into this, we'll be negotiating 2-3 years from now.
Okay.
We really,
in my opinion.
We have a new town manager coming in.
And the county commissioners will want to decide what the building's going to look like and what the sidewalk pavement's going to be made of.
Hopefully the property tax and plus sales tax will make up for that loss.
We have a couple of park funds that I personally want to have the county vote bonds and that we share the money. And so county money is coming to Southern Community Park, the Aquatic Center, and there's two examples in the last couple of years. And we had a bright idea of having a project planning committee so that two representatives of the commissioners and two representatives of the council could have these meetings, not dissimilar to these four committees. But the commissioners go behind us and because it is jointly financed, feel responsibility to pay attention to minute details in these plans. And it is
it's great that we have public money, but it is slow and laborious.
That's what I'm saying. That's just a question.
It does answer my question. Any other thing I think?
Clear, so clear.
The other sort of question, I think this is sort of what you're hitting on, was, I mean, this is one of the things we were looking at on the person in the financing, that literally this annex property, if it was, you know, deeded over to the town, does that give you a little bit more political cover then?
Yes.
And in fact, you're picking up additional property, and you're filling in a gap on Franklin Street.
Right.
Okay.
Anytime you create additional value for the community, then you give the council more of a reason to be interested in that. So think about it in those kinds of ways. And those
so
are the key things.
So this part of the view is being responsible for getting everyone through?
Our finance and the wholesalers are the two who shared. But you know, frankly, they won't be of any benefit to us at all. They're both great guys, and they both love Chapel Hill, they're here all the time, I know them real well, but they won't have any benefit to us in this discussion at all. The only way they might would be if we got to the point of the council actually wishing to take advantage of the law, then they might call some of the folks who are on the local government commission. But if we've got a good deal, the local government commission is not going to be a problem anyway.
Glenn's firm had a lot to do with it too.
My guess is it would be more reasonable and easier for the council, if they decide to do this, to either do it the way I just described to you a moment ago, with us paying you, or to do it on the basis of what some folks would call a backdoor TIF or a synthetic TIF, where you don't go through the tax increment financing rigmaroles, but you, in essence, plan to pay back the debt with the additional monies that you have coming in as your cops on that basis.
I may regret asking this question, but how much land does the town own adjacent to the cemetery?
The land that we own adjacent to the cemetery is principally on the other end of it. And we're developed pretty much these are the east side, I think, principally.
It's up by Legion Road.
It's the west one that we don't have much development.
So, one is there space for
they've identified a great space for a funeral home, and I think Mr. Wilson is probably going to be willing to sell from everything I can understand. They're not hurting for a site. They found a good site.
We could swap the dollars that they're going to pay for a site into the deal if you do a land swap or something.
I like that.
If you have a good site.
But
I think it'd be problematic because it is right across the street from a residential neighborhood, and it's in an area where there's
nice
a ravine.
This is where it's
contemplated
at one point.
Yeah, but on a much smaller footprint.
So
with a lot less parking.
Would you all just consider that?
Sure.
I mean,
you all being us?
He's saying,
you all count.
We're trying to get dollars into this deal. And it fits the spirit of the type of transaction this is.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Thank you,
sir. The place to do it would be on the Porter Boulevard side.
So away from the neighborhood?
Away from the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. There's a big ravine there. There may be...
If you recall, there was a traditional neighborhood use. 6 feet under.
Anyway, I
sure we can think about that.
Talk about that. It might be a few $1 million we're saving Jason.
I'm trying to remember what we thought we were going to pick on. I don't think it was
cheap.
Council member is bargaining with you. Who's been talking about?
those are the key things that I thought of based on the conversation I heard y'all had. Did I leave anything out that's particularly significant?
If what we have to do is deliver to you those things, have the benefit of the work we need to do with John, and we're delivering this, and we get 100% lead pipe assurance that the documentation we deliver is protected, under no circumstance does it have to get released until the end.
We can do that, can't we, right?
Who you send it to?
Yes.
I'm only going to send it to whoever it is I get to send it to, though.
Get that service free.
Well, we're going to have it to evaluate it.
Well, we're going to evaluate it. He's going to have custody of it.
Okay.
So, because that is critical, obviously.
Okay. And the other thing is, Ralph's not going to give it to anybody. I'm not going to give it to anybody. I don't believe these counselors.
I'm not suggesting that they would. I don't want to give somebody something that they got to give somebody.
Yeah. I don't think there's anybody here who can be compelled to give it under these circumstances until after everything is negotiated. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. If somebody calls
the same way it was before, in essence.
Right. You could call Ralph if somebody says,
yeah,
give me your work document. That's
okay. You call Ralph.
And Ralph would say,
no. So, I mean, I think, I'd like to talk to Susan about the workings of what you need from us, except for some of the follow-up we need to do with John. We have most of it. We don't have the pretty pictures.
Right. It's not assembled in a coherent package.
That's the key word, coherent, because the stuff you've been giving to me the last couple of weeks, to me, a little disjointed. You know, they seem to be different assumptions, like the number of housing units on the annex has gone from 11 to 14 to 23.
That is one of the problems of, you know, people ask for information, they want right away, and they want working process. I will assure you that I don't know, by the 15th of July, you're talking three to four weeks from now, you will have a package of this coherent and thorough. I can't promise it will be any sooner than that. If you want
that gives John some time to take a look at it, and by the time he's finished looking at it, vacation season will be over.
All right. So we'll have to extend the negotiating period on the 26th.
Well, I'll bring the council's recommendation that it be extended until October 1, just so you have some time. And I'll report generally that the discussions on the development agreement have gone well. As to the legalities, and that there is a need for further consideration, that RAM is interested in eliminating underground parking and acquiring additional land so that parking can be created above ground, saving costs and expanding the impact of the project, that kind of thing. We need to go ahead and get all these things more formally on the table just so everybody knows what's going on, but not in details, just in general. Is that agreeable to the committee?
Yes.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
I really appreciate you coming.
Excuse me, Captain.
Thank you.